Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the ManaPro Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Tuesday, June 26th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in today on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and, of course, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro. ManaPro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that ManaPro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom-labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
Since 1921, Stromberg's has been a family-owned and operated business, providing quality poultry and poultry supplies to their customers. Today, the Stromberg family offers over 200 different breeds of poultry, including chickens, waterfowl, and game birds. They also offer poultry supplies for the beginner or advanced poultry keeper. Stromberg should be on the top of your list when it comes time to order. Shop online at www.strombergschickens.com or call today at 1-800-720-1134. Remember, that's strombergschickens.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Thank you to all the over-the-road truck drivers that listen to the show on a regular basis, all the homeschoolers, and, of course, all the feed and seed stores that stream this radio show live every day in their stores for their customers. We thank you very much for that and sharing the poultry love. So we got a great show lined up for you today. Before we get kind of started to that, we'll have a little bit of a host chat. It is Tuesday, the 26th of June. I can't believe July is almost here. And this morning I was working a little bit on the little tour we've got coming up in July that we'll talk about here a little bit as well. But I think we all know, based on the sound of the music, that Pat is nearby. That could only mean one thing, and that is that Pat Foreman, author of many great titles, is nearby and has joined us live here. We are gracious enough to have her here today with us, Pat Foreman. Hey, Pat.
Oh, Whisper, you are so funny. You know, that is one of my favorite pieces, too, of all time, is Beethoven's Hallelujah Chorus.
Well, so, I tell you, it was sung at my mom's funeral. She loved that song more than I think life itself, and for decades, she says, I want that sung at my funeral, and we kind of raised our eyebrows, but she insisted on it till the very end, and sure enough, probably the only funeral ever in the history of Earth has the Hallelujah Chorus been sung at a funeral, but it was, and it was moving and touching, but so it has special meaning here in my heart as well, but it is a classic, so I hope you're doing well.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I'll make that number two, Whisper, because I would love to have that played or sung at my funeral as well. It's like, hey, I've made it. I've gone on to those pearly gates. So I'll see you there.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I tell you what, it was kind of a mixed morning. It's been a great morning. Nobody can complain, I tell you what. But I burned a pot of peas. I was so disappointed. It was our our first little harvest of zipper peas, probably not more than about 2 quarts worth, and I just got carried away and in another room, and I walked into the kitchen and there they were in the old cast iron kettle just sizzling away, no water at all, boiled all the water out, and so I was just I said a few choice words and then went on with my day. So,
well, what were those words now?
I mentioned that on the radio, thanks to FCC regulation. But pardon me. Nonetheless, hey, it wasn't a whole huge pan full. So, man, I'm telling you, the garden pad is just amazing. And tonight, yesterday, we went out and picked squash, and I'd say a lot of it could have picked, but it could have been picked the day before. I mean, you know, when squash gets too big, it just gets it's tough. It's not that great. You got it. You know, you really got to get them when they're small or medium sized. And we raided a little too late, and then of course we were definitely too late on the okra. Man, that okra sneaks up on you. I can tell you now, we made
does.
That in the past. And you walk outside and you're like, great googly moogly, what the heck happened here? And so I've got about half the harvest of okra yesterday is going to the trash because they're just all about 5 inches long and just hard as a rock. You can't do anything with them.
Chickens. Throw it in that pot with those burnt peas and just give it to your chickens.
We surely missed the goats so bad because, and of course, y'all know they got their lives taken by a stray dog here. But it's just we're like, oh, I wish we had the goats, but we're just not quite ready to build that pen yet. And probably this fall we'll get back into that groove. But the okra and the squash, we had not half the, probably about a third of the harvest last night of squash was really too big, and about half the okra was probably too big to utilize for human consumption. But that's okay. Again, a huge garden. We got plenty of that. But tonight around 7, we'll be out there because we got to pick the black-eyed peas again, the zipper peas again, the green beans again, and our butter beans. Tonight will be the first harvest of our butter beans, so we're looking forward to that. Once the radio show's over, I guarantee you all afternoon I'll be blanching and putting up snap beans. Gin last night snapped a whole 5-gallon, more than a 5-gallon.
Oh, my. She did that by herself?
She's quick on that, but she did a good job. So I'll be blanching those and freezing those this afternoon, and I'm in the market for probably an upright freezer. Everybody says the chest freezers, they save a little bit money buying those, but that you'll like the upright freezer a lot more when it comes to organization and finding things and getting to things. Sure. Stuff won't get lost in the very bottom of the chest freezer and be there for the next 19 years. But also we're looking at maybe a pressure canner. You know, the theory there is that, you know, if the power goes out, I won't be on pins and needles if it's an extended outage, losing all of this food. And, you know, a good pressure canner is about half of what a freezer is, and then you can always reuse the jars, and you can just, you know, storage is, you can store it, heck, anywhere in your house. You can put food storage under your bed, if you're anywhere for that matter, when you got, you know, canned mm-hmm. in jars. So we're looking at that. I'm excited because I think tomorrow, I'll have to go and look at the tracking number tomorrow, Thursday at the latest, but I think tomorrow we'll be getting our Mr. P Sheller. It's a neat little P Sheller. I couldn't obviously afford a professional one, and even some of the home models get pretty pricey, coming in at about $300. But this thing was about $35, Pat, and it's about the size, let's just say it's about, I'm guessing, 8 inches square. And it's got a little handle on it, so you can manually turn it, and you just, you know, feed the peas in, and then as you turn it, it shells the peas for you. And so, or you can actually hook it if you have like a powered hand mixer. Instead of sliding the beaters up into those slots, you can just slide this sheller into that slot, the handle there, and turn it on, and it automatically just turns it. Then you just automatically just feed these peas in as fast as you can. Or you can connect it for a real fast pea shelling. You can connect it to a drill. Plug the drill in the wall, and then kind of zip tie the trigger of the drill to the speed you want it. And then, boy, you can just feed as fast as you can with two hands these peas, and they just automatically shells them. So I'm really looking forward to getting that. That'll save us a lot of time for not the snap beans, obviously, but the peas, zippers, the black-eyed peas, the butter beans. So I'm looking forward to getting to that and trying out and let everybody know, is it worth the $35, maybe $40 with whatever total for that. So I'll let everybody know that. We also tomorrow, the next day, are getting our – there's not located in this county or the county next to us. We could not find – and those of you who turned on yesterday, this is probably repeat information, but we could not find Arm & Hammer Super Washing Powders. Could not find it anywhere because we make our own laundry detergent with borax and that and Castile soap. Couldn't find it, so I had to order it off Amazon as well. So it's coming along with this pea sheller, so we'll be making – a big batch of that here in the next couple of days. Let me see and let me mention just a couple of things here, and then we'll get on with the show. I want to remind everybody that for the whole month of June, we still have our coupon code JUNEWHISPER at eggcartons.com. You get 10% off a $50 purchase. So it's again 10% off. $10 off, which is 20% off. $10 off a $50 purchase, and then. Also, one more thing that's very, very exciting. I don't know if you were on the show, Pat, or not. I don't think you were when we started this, but it has it's in full steam, and we are actually collecting money, donations for fellow chicken lover Melody Myers and her husband. Her husband Keith has been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and she would like She would like nothing else but to take him on a dream trout fishing trip that he has always wanted to go on. And so last week, Pat, I contacted the owner of a river resort in Arkansas, and he's agreed to donate for them. It's an awesome deal, a 4-hour guided fishing trip every day that they're there. We're hoping to raise $1,000. That should be able to get an all-expense-paid trip for at least 5 days, maybe 7 days. That includes meals, the gas to get there, the lodging, everything. And so our goal right now is $1,000. We started this, I think, last Thursday, I think we started this. And we do this about twice a year. Our old listeners know this. And as of right now, we've raised about $700. Our goal is $1,000, and I'll stop pestering people about it. The money goes directly to them. It doesn't go to me, and then I cut them a check. It doesn't go into my right through their PayPal account to be used on this dream trip, so they can have some good quality time together. But the owner of the facility has donated a fully guided fishing trip every day. That's 160 $69 value every single day. So if they want to do one of those every day or 5 days a week, that would be a $600-$700 value right there that the owner of this lodge. It's very affordable to stay there. It's about $79 a night, and that gets them a private cabin on the river, fully furnished, TV, bed, bath, shower, I mean everything. It's not like a sleeping bag cabin, a fully furnished cabin for about $79 a night. They have a lunch and dinner every day at the lodge, breakfast on the weekend. So we're hoping that, well, again, that $1,000 we feel we'll give them enough gas money to get from where they're at in western Tennessee over to Arkansas. It's about a 3-hour drive, gas there and back, gas while they're there if they make any excursions, all the meals they'll need for the week, and the hotel for the week, and of course the fishing guided fishing tour every day that they're there. So we're hoping at least a 5-day all expense paid trip for them, and so we're very proud. We're up to about $700, so we just have $300 to go to hit our $1,000 goal. Any more would just be gravy for them, and then, or they can use it towards medical expenses or daily expenses around the house. And so we're definitely, so let me give everybody the PayPal email address, if you're familiar, where you can donate. Basically what you do is you just go to paypal.com. When that site pops up, you just click on the little key there. It says send money. It's right across the top. There are different things that you can punch. It'll say send money. You click on that, and then it'll say send money to, or it'll have a 2 next to a little box. And this is the email address, folks, you want to send $2, $5, $10, $50. We had someone today post on our Facebook page. They sent $100 today. So it's amazing, the outpour, you know, the kind of the what do you call it, the pass it on type of thing. And so we've got let's see, what's the email address? I know it's on here somewhere. Here it is. Myers, M-Y-E-R-S, 2008. So Myers, M-Y-E-R-S, 2008, at Hughes.net, H-U-G-H-E-S.net. That's Myers, M-Y-E-R-S, 2008, at Hughes, H-U-G-H-E-S. .net. That's who you're sending the money to, right to their account, and then from, you can put your email address in. Now, my understanding, I may be wrong, is that if you already have a PayPal account and you're just sending money from your PayPal account over to theirs, I don't think there's a fee involved. I may be wrong. But if you, let's say you don't have a PayPal account and you're just going to do this, you can do it the same way, but you're just going to send like do Visa or MasterCard or something like that, I think there's a $1.75 fee. So if you donate $10, your bill will come out to $11.75, I believe. So, but anyway, so that's PayPal, not anybody else, but the money goes directly to them so they can use on this trip. And we're very close. I think we lack probably about $300 worth to get that $1,000 goal. So I anticipate on doing this 100%, and we will keep posting this on our Facebook and Twitter pages until it is done. But we hope by the end of this week we'll hit our goal of $1,000. And we do this about twice a year, folks. Pat knows, she's been here a long time. We do this about twice a year, whether, you know, we had 1 year a barn burned down, and we've been and we helped do a benefit for them. We had a 16-year-old that had cancer. We did the best we could to help her out, make her dreams come true. So again, about twice a year, we'll utilize our reach with the Facebook and the Twitter and the radio show to try to do some good here. And so that's what we're doing now. So I wanted to make that announcement as well. But we got Christine Heinrich here today. She is a historian with the Preservation, the Society for Preservation of Poultry Antiquities, and she's going to be talking to us about several topics today. She's going to start off talking about Frank Reese's American Treasures Award. How awesome is that? Based for his heritage poultry. And then kind of a great way to lead us into the 4th of July holiday. And then we're going to talk a little bit about American chicken breeds and unique American poultry, the turkey and the Muscovy duck. So we've got a lot to talk about today. And so I just wanted to get those kind of announcements out of the way. So let me switch gears here. And I was getting all that information about the donation. So here we go. And let's go ahead and bring on Christine Heinrich. And by the way, her website, you can go to www.poultrybookstore.com, www.poultrybookstore.com, and straight over to her blog as well. You can hear her blog from there, and which is fabulous. And she's also got a great site there where actually post a lot of the chicken events and poultry shows there. It's probably the best online resource where you can get all the different shows all across the country. So, Christine, thank you very much for joining us.
Good morning. How are you? It sounds like everything's going great.
Yeah. Hey, Christine. Welcome. It's going to be a great show.
Hi, Pat. Yeah, welcome to summer. Here we are already. It's summer 2012.
That's right. The days are getting shorter now already.
Yes, yes. Theoretically, yeah. It takes a while to really notice it. You know, it stays about the really long days for this next month or 6 weeks, and then we'll start noticing a little bit.
Mm-hmm. On the 20th, Jen's birthday, and that happened to be the longest day of the year. So she says, hey, I get to celebrate my birthday longer than anybody else.
Well, happy birthday, Jen.
Yes, happy belated birthday, Jen. That's wonderful. Gosh, what an auspicious day to be born. This is 20th of
Jesus. Yeah. On Earth Day, and her birthday is always normally the first day of summer, but I guess it's the longest. Sometimes it falls on that day, the longest day of the year, so it's pretty cool. I looked at the weather, speaking of summer is here, and the next seven days here in good old ideal Georgia, we're supposed to hit 101 three of those days. And 99 three of those days. So the next about week, we're going to be 99 to 101 degrees. That's actual temperature. So I'm kind of dreading that because my water bill is going to go up for the garden, I'm sure. So I'm kind of dreading that. But, of course, these window air conditioners are going to be working overtime. But it's going to be hot. It's going to be hot. So take care of those chickens, folks.
Yeah, that's certainly an issue. I've seen some postings on other listservs about people struggling with chickens that are getting too hot. I think it's out in Oklahoma. Gosh, what's his name? George McLaughlin. Yeah, he's had chickens for many years, and he lets his roam out on range, and they find their own shade, and he hasn't had too many problems with it. But you know, not all of us have that kind of setup, so it's certainly something to bear in mind that they need circulation, they need shade, they need lots of water.
Yeah, what kind of shade does he provide for them? Is like trees or
it's
or
like trees and shrubs, yeah.
Shrubs, yeah. Well, that's something to think about, too, when you're planning your long-term run or run space is to do birdscaping for shade for the hot summers. And
yeah,
that's what I've been doing. I'm planting some mulberry trees as shade for my flock. In the run, so they can get under them, including a little dwarf weeping mulberry that makes a little tent. It's so cute. I can hardly wait till it grows up.
yeah,
shade
I think
is
that
so
that's,
important for flocks.
That's the first choice if you can get some natural shade because that keeps the ground cooler and mm-hmm. the air can circulate and just everything is better that way if you have that option.
Yeah, and if that shade can provide some bird food as well, you know, some of the
right.
fruit trees or nut trees, you know, it's like a triple win situation.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, and just on your comments, Andy, you were talking about getting an upright rather than a chest freezer. You know, it certainly what you mentioned about losing stuff
mm-hmm.
at the bottom of the chest freezer, that can happen, but we've got a chest freezer here, and I have baskets in it that kind of set
right.
They are suspended from the edges, so you can really get stuff around and handle stuff in small amounts. And so I haven't had that problem just by having those baskets in there. So that's something you might think about.
Yeah, I've noticed most of them come with a couple of baskets, and then just underneath that, it's just like free-for-all. And me and Jen discussed that. We're like, you know, we can get some nice, decent baskets at the dollar store for $1. And then put them down in there if we were going to go that route and organize. And I'm telling you, the same cubic foot chest freezer is about $200 less than an upright with the same cubic foot. So I mean, it's definitely a decision you have to make. We're looking for used. Where I'm all over Craigslist and see if I can, you know, if we lived in a more populated area like Atlanta and it's just right up the road and probably get one. There's a few of them out there, but in a rural area, you kind of like have to factor in. Well, it's an hour drive and the old truck with no air, and then I got to get it and drive it back. So you know, we're just waiting and taking our time and. like I said, with a pressure canner at about half the cost, maybe even less than half the cost, and plus jars that you can always reuse, we may actually be getting that before we get the freezer. Again, my only concern is I'm chicken when it comes to canning, not necessarily because the thing may blow up. I know there's a lot of safety features now. The new ones are very easy, and they have all these kind of safety things built in. They don't have seals anymore that you have to replace. I mean, you know, we've been doing a little research on those. My paranoia is that, you know, and I don't know if you do it right, you know, people have been doing this long before freezers were around. And, I mean, heck, they used to hang meat out in the shed in the back and pour some salt on it and eat it, and they were fine. But it's just the botulism. I just, for some reason in the back of my head, I don't know if it was some childhood spook or something like that that haunts me to this day about doing it wrong and then opening up and eating some peas one night and then dying because I get botulism because I canned them the wrong way.
Food safety is a huge issue, and you know we should all bear that in mind. You know, that's certainly something that's of concern. But yeah, one of the other concerns for us out here in California about the freezer is every time you open that upright freezer door, all that cold air falls out, whereas in a chest freezer, it stays down below. And we right. have frequent power outages here. So that's a concern for us that, you know, we have something that we could keep cool even for a couple of days if we were to lose power. So anyway, yeah, there's pros and cons to all of them, and you just have to figure out what's right for you. And I'm sure, you know, like you say, looking for a used one, the right appliance is going to come along for you.
One of these days, yeah, just have – man, I was telling Janet, you know, Dahlonega is on the other side of the state. If we were living where we lived before we moved here last year, I would have definitely capitalized on it. But, you know, and you come across these on Craigslist, y'all know it was, you know, the largest chest freezer I think you could buy, one of the big, long, six-foot, huge models that was a year old, and they wanted $100. They were moving. They were moving across country and could not take it with them. They're like, first one with $100 and come gets it. Come on. And I was just like, you know, a year old, biggest made, you know, $650 value for $100. And I was thinking,
yeah,
well, you know, one of those days, I found a few things on Craigslist that way. I looked into and picking them up. So maybe one, you know, but since we do have a little, you know, time to shop around, maybe we'll see if we can find a deal here recently. Of course, the funny thing is I see a lot that, you know, they post their freezer on Facebook and you look at it, and not Facebook, but Craigslist, and you look at it and it's like they don't even take the time to clean it up. I mean, you look at it and you're like, it'll take me 2 hours to get all this thawed out, you know, strawberry pie filling out of this thing. I said, you're out of your mind. So most folks have, you know, they've cleaned it up and they look nice. Who knows what they look like before? But so I've seen a few that are like, you know, it'll take me 2 hours or more just to get that thing back into a condition I would feel comfortable.
That's kind of creepy.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not so sure I'd want to partake in that. So, but most folks are. Somebody put on the chat room. They said, "Big chest freezers come in handy for naps on hot summer days." Pat, you're back live too, by the way.
You just will crawl inside of a Nick and feel so good. Oh gosh. Yeah, at a camp where I volunteered at, they had a walk-in cooler, and we'd have meetings in there. it would just be so hot out. But anyway, that's funny.
Anyway, well, getting back to this exciting award that Frank Reese got, he has a Good Shepherd Turkey Ranch, Poultry Ranch out in Kansas. If anyone hasn't heard of him, certainly go Google that and take a look
Absolutely.
At his site. He's mm-hmm. just been doing a wonderful job. He's really dedicated his whole life to initially turkeys, but certainly chickens as well. And he's doing a wonderful job. He's worked a lot with the ALBC on creating a definition of heritage chickens. You know, that's one of the things that's plagued the small flock producers, is that, you know, anyone can use these words, you know, natural, free range, whatever, on their chickens, and they don't have legal definitions. Except for the word organic, there aren't legal definitions. So they can really, you know, anyone, you know, Tyson can put slap natural onto its label,
mm-hmm.
with, you know, with no mm-hmm. consequences. So that was one of Frank's concerns, was that marketing needs to be tightened up so that people who are raising a better product can market it for a higher price and be compensated for it. Because as we know, you know, you can raise a million chickens in a shed and sell them for 99 cents a pound.
Right.
But you can't really do that if you've got a flock of a couple of hundred barred rocks or a couple of hundred buckeyes, and
mm-hmm.
there is value in what you're doing. But the general public, this is also something that all of us chicken people need to take on and keep educating the public. You know, Pat, as you know, this is, chickens have come a long way. The backyard, the idea of the backyard flock has come a long way in the past 10 years. But there's still a lot to go. That's within, you know, the community that's interested in local food and interested in self-sufficiency.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the people who are eating at McDonald's, you know, they don't know one chicken from the next. And a lot of people...
And they may not want to know one chicken from the next either.
They may not write at
the
chart.
The truth is, you know,
a lot of people really do. You know, I find when I start bringing this up... Sometimes I haven't really found the best way to present this because it's a little bit complex, but I'm working on that too, you know, getting that elevator speech that I can tell the whole story in,
yeah.
you know, 2 minutes.
Yeah. I'll help you with that because I've been doing sort of that, the Cornish cross elevator speech to quite a few people, and their eyes cross easily.
Right.
Like, what are
right.
You
That's
talking?
What, yeah, I notice that people are sort of, you know, tuning out. So I need to work on that a little bit. But Frank's done a great deal of work on that. And one of his, yeah, you know, he's worked with ALBC. They do have that definition now so that he, when he puts that label on his chickens or other people who have raised birds to those standards can use that, and it now has some meaning. You know, it remains to spread throughout the consumers what that exactly means, but it's certainly gotten started, and Frank's really the one who's been responsible for that. This award, it's a very interesting award. I had not heard of the American Treasures Award before, and this is the first time that they've given it to a poultry producer. They started this, actually, it's called Made in America, and they began this because they wanted people to, they wanted to give recognition to the, actually, the manufacturers who were making their products in the United States. And so they started this with some furniture manufacturers, and then a couple of years ago they got involved with the sustainability issues and started looking further into food production. And so this year they decided to give this to Frank. Now, it involves a 4th of July culinary event. They're going to have chefs there at the Capitol, who will be meeting with Frank, who's going to be bringing his barred rocks and his white Jersey Giants to Washington, yes, to be
to
cooked
Washington.
Into. Yes, this is Washington, D.C. on the 4th of July.
Oh, my
what
gosh.
A great event.
Oh,
yeah, I was thinking, oh, man, I wish I could go. It just sounds
too
wonderful.
Too much has happened on the 4th of July this year, but, well, good for Frank.
Yes.
So are they going to cook them, or what's the agenda?
They are going
to
be cooking them at
mm-hmm.
the Washington Design Center and serving them to all the assembled guests. That'll be from 1 to 3 in the afternoon, and they'll also at that same time be a design show of furniture for their manufacturing awards. And then they will be announcing all the awards and making an official presentation that evening. And all the award winners will be going to the West Front Inaugural Terrace for the National Symphony Orchestra for the 4th of July concert and the National Fireworks Display.
Wow,
so,
that's
they're
a great
gonna...
place to watch it from, too.
Oh, it's just wonderful. And, you know, it puts... You know, just this issue of people not being informed, it puts Frank and his issues right in front of a wonderful audience of opinion leaders and starts educating those people who may not even be aware that this is going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's going to have a lot of great effects. I think it's going to be really an exciting thing. I sure wish I could be there with him. I haven't talked to him lately. He was hoping to bring his own chef along who has been doing a lot of work with him.
Oh, that's got to be Steve Pope. It's got to be
Steve Pope, yeah.
Yeah.
All
right. Oh, God, that would be so much fun up there.
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Oh, come on, let's go. Hop in your jet, Christine. Get out
of here. Okay, yeah, you're not that far.
I'm not. Oh, my gosh, that is so tempting.
You know, really think of that. You know, just contact Frank because each award winner gets, you know, can bring so many, you know, some number, 8 I think it is, guests with them. And I know that Frank was struggling even to raise the money to get himself and Steve there, and he wasn't sure if both of them would be able to go, and I haven't heard. So he probably won't be using up all his tickets, and certainly I can contact the guys in charge and get you in there, Pat.
Ooh,
and then you could write a great story about it and tell us all about what happened.
That is so tempting. Christine, I've been invited to Monticello. To their, they have an award, they have a naturalization where people get their citizenship on the lawn there. And I feel like, oh my gosh, which way do I turn? Which way do I turn?
Oh, that sounds wonderful, Pat.
God, I wonder if I could do both. We'll see. I'm going to think about this one long and hard.
Oh, that sounds really wonderful. What a moving ceremony that must be.
Oh yeah, it's just a real tearjerker because it's a you can see it on their website if you just go to I think it's MonticelloJeffersonFoundation.org, but it's incredibly moving. You see, everyone's a teary eyed, so I'm going to take a whole pocket full of Kleenex because it doesn't take much to get me teary, you know. Yeah, even when I had to leave Oprah Winfrey, I had tears. Oh, with you, thank God. You're with
I know.
You.
She's doing fine, goodness. By the way.
Oh, great, great, great. Oh, she's a super aunt. My goodness. Well, anyway, I'll think about this and maybe you can work something out. And I got to tell you, Sue, just and tell our listening audience, Frank has become one of my heroes. The more I listen to him, and I've been with in his a couple of his workshops with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy, he knows what he's talking about. And they're starting a school program now as well that's going to be real, that I want to take. It's like, can I sign up for it? That'll be a degree program. So there's a lot more that he's got his little beacon to. And he's an anesthesiologist. You know, he works in the hospital doing anesthesiology. That's how he pays for his chicken and turkey work. So he's subsidizing a lot, like the rest of us, you know, to bring this information out. So he's a super, super guy. I have nothing but the utmost respect for his integrity and his actions that he's doing.
Well, one of the things that is helping him, I mean, it is kind of tough. It's great that he's got another career, but it would be wonderful if he could do chickens and turkeys full time. And he... When they came out and reviewed his farm for this award and also with the American Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals is also looking at his farm for his humane practices. And one of Frank's convictions is that many of these hybrids, particularly the Cornish Rock Cross, is by its nature inhumane, that those birds are miserable.
They're physically cruel. It's breeding cruelty into livestock.
Yes, that you're hatching cruelty and you're raising cruelty when you raise those birds, and that the heritage breeds are really the only ones that you have to have a heritage breed to be raising chickens humanely. And this has to do, you know, there's a lot of different hybrids out there, and I don't want to paint them all with the Cornish rock brush, but the fact is a lot of those breeding flocks also are subjected to questionable conditions that may, you know, it may not be obvious from the birds that you get, but it's not clear that the conditions under which they, that are required in order to get those hybrids are in fact humane. And a lot
That's
of this
right.
we don't know, because a lot of it the hatcheries keep very secret. And this is, you know, something that doesn't have a lot of transparency in it. So anyway, that's part of what has involved Frank with the humane work of the ASPCA. And they were out there, and they combined with Farm Forward to
Good.
Finance a new barn for him that will enable him to expand his breeding operation substantially.
Wow. Well, that's fabulous.
Yeah, so that's getting built, and he will be able to raise a lot more birds. He plans to have about 12,000 turkeys ready for Thanksgiving this year.
Oh, my God. That's
and
incredible.
He also has 600 laying hens producing 80 to 100 dozen eggs each week that are sold in markets near his Kansas farm.
Oh, my gosh. How does he find time to work in the hospital?
See, that's the thing. You know, I mean, it's really hard for him. So, and
yeah.
he's been working with other farmers out there, which one of the problems with that is that they're so separated.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to get around and costs so much for gas that's kind of not been working out for him as well as he'd hoped.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, if I were a multimillionaire, I would endow Frank and just fund his operations, because he's so right on, and he knows what he's talking about. He gave a talk down at the ALBC, like I mentioned, and he said he can tell which of his turkeys was from which pair by certain colors in their feathering, on their
goodness, the
pattern. I mean, it's like an eye that is just for detail that is just absolutely incredible.
Yeah, he's just been so deeply involved, and that was one of the things that the executive director of the foundation that gave him this award said, that you know the length and breadth of his involvement is just unequaled. There's just no one else who is doing what he's doing and who has done it for as long.
It's true. He's one of the masters. I mean, he's a resource that. Can you tell I really like him? He's almost an irreplaceable resource.
We gotta
take good care of him.
Yeah, he is truly, truly special, and he's really stepped up and is right at the front of things. He's done a lot of research on the whole issue of the genetics of the Cornish Rock Cross. And, you know, I was hearing on the radio this morning that chicken consumption has really increased in the American diet over the last 20 years. And, of course, people say, oh, well, you know, don't eat red meat because it's too fatty, eat chicken. But the fact of the matter is that these Cornish Rock Crosses are every bit as fatty as red meat from beef and pork.
Well, they're more fatty. That's the thing, that landmark study from the University of London, Christine, that they took the entire carcass of a Cornish Cross and analyzed it and found that there was more energy available from fat than from protein.
Yeah,
more
which means more calories, more fat.
That's exactly
calories.
The opposite of normal, healthy animals, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, that fat, it's not even normal fat. That's the other thing that really gets you in the gut, kicks you in the gut literally, is it has a ratio of omega-6 to omega-3s of 9 to 1, whereas a healthy ratio, what we're all striving for, is about 1 to 1, 2 to 1. So, you know, these birds would be on statin drugs if they were people. They're clinically not right.
Yeah, they're truly not, and medically, you know, that kind of is the old recommendation. Well, eat more chicken, you know, lean meat. Chicken is not lean meat. It's not the stuff that you're getting in the stores. So,
No. And this article ended by suggesting, are obese chickens making people obese? Is it possible that because we're eating these this kind of frankenfood chicken that's also high in thyroid stimulating hormone. That's how they get so big so fast, partly. I mean, is that traveling up the food chain? And is that partly what's causing obesity across the planet? It's
well,
interesting.
You know,
I mean, the web
it is interesting. And there's part of that that seems illogical, but, you know, I can't help but look at, you know, gee, we've got this problem of obesity in our population, and we're all eating animals that are obese. Gee, you know, is there a connection? It seems like, it seems to me sort of obvious, and it's certainly something that I consider in what I choose to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, just if you're eating things that are already obese and have problems, well, you know, it's not really to me that surprising that those problems then show up in the people that are consuming them. And, of course, it's not just the problem of those individual birds that end up on our grocery store shelves, but the Frank looked into this even further and found that the parent flocks of those birds have to be, you know, because they grow so fast, they're constantly hungry, and yet
right.
those parent flocks, to avoid them getting so obese that they are unable to breed, have to be severely limited on their food and even on their water. So those flocks are constantly hungry and thirsty, and it's and with no relief ever in their lives because their metabolism is racing along at 300 times normal, and they are seeking to satisfy that because they've been bred for that. And yet, so it's a very tragic kind of life, and it's hard to think that that's the way the bottom line of American profit making has brought this industry to really not a happy time. And I look forward to the day when small flocks of heritage breeds are the way we get our chickens, so that we can all eat better and feel better in our hearts about how these animals are living their lives.
Yeah. Well, a lot of it, that's one incentive for having your own family flock. You know, what do you do with all the roosters if you raise your own?
That's right.
They have happy lives. They've been out in the open. They've lived a good feed. What do you do with them? So I'm getting more and more comfortable with processing the roosters and having rooster stew or whatever.
That's right.
Yeah. And besides, they get kind of cranky, you too. They gang up on those. They get a little abusive and rude, so off they go.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, they're domestic birds. That's what they were developed for. You know, these are not wild birds that, you know, are migrating from one place to the next or whatever. These are birds that have been developed so that they are part of our diet, and that's a normal thing to happen with them, you know, and for people who don't want to eat meat, that's fine, but this is what chickens are.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's true. But, you know, the consumption of poultry has, I read a statistic, and I'm going to try to Google it here and come up with it, but it's like doubled or tripled in the last something, and I don't want to give a wrong statistic, but it's not a little bit that people are eating a lot. I mean, like their weight many times over in chicken. Let me see if I can find it.
You know, check. I heard a story that used those numbers on NPR this morning, on Morning Edition, so they might have it in there. But, yeah, that's certainly an issue, and people do eat a lot. You know, they were saying, you know, NPR is doing a special this week for summer of, you know, what's on the grill about meat. And they're looking at that, and, you know, they said when the Irish were escaping from Ireland from the potato famine back in the mid-19th century, they would write letters home and say, you know, I eat meat every day here. And their relatives would write back and say, you know, that's just unbelievable. We can't believe that anyone eats meat every day. And so, you know, that's kind of, you know, it's certainly, you know, meat is a good, healthy food. But maybe we're eating more of it, and we've developed this economic system of agribusiness that has gives us very cheap meat, but with questionable other values. So I think that that's kind of what people are looking at, you know, kind of saying, well, you know, it's not just price. You know, we can't buy on price alone.
Yeah. Well, there's another factor, too, that's coming in, and that's it's still in the research days, but it's a thing called xenohormesis. And xeno means foreign, and hormesis is hormonally related. And there's evidence that says if you eat something that is stressed, like whether it's a fish or a livestock or whatever, that those stress markers in the biochemistry of that animal can actually travel up through the food chain. So that's, you know, if we're raising livestock that is stressed through their whole lives, or even, and we've seen this even with processing meat humanely, that those that are processed humanely, they tend to be calm, they're really relaxed, the meat isn't as tough, but if they're really upset and relaxed and have that high lactic acid build up, you know, that travels on up through the food chain, that those muscles are build up with lactic acid. So anyway, there's a whole era that needs so much more research, and I think we're just starting to be aware of how we really are what we eat. And
yeah.
oftentimes when you look at the mirror, it might be that beaver looking back at you, or that chicken chicken with little waddles clucking at you. So
that opens a lot of artistic possibilities, Pat.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Oh, gosh.
But
oh,
I think you know, we are thinking of some interesting things, and I'm glad that this Take Pride in America celebration is focusing on Frank and giving him some more attention and a wider platform from which to talk about his ideas.
Absolutely. The time is here. Here's a statistic. This is from the American Meat Institute fact sheet. And it's in 1980, people were eating about 48 pounds per capita of chicken, about 48 pounds. And then this only goes up to 2006, but they were eating about 80 pounds.
Wow.
About 80. So it's almost doubled in the past, 20 plus years. It'd be interesting to see what it is now with 2012, because it seems like fast food really, really took off with the chicken nuggets and things, nuggets and whatever part of the meat that is.
Yes.
Relatively recently within the last 5-10 years, they've been around, but not so much around. Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. And the chicken wings.
Yeah,
that
the wings.
Got huge. And the buffalo wings, that kind of thing has gotten really huge. As a matter of fact, I heard someone saying the other day that there's a rumor that goes around the internet every now and again that some company has developed an 8-winged chicken.
With nuggets.
Right.
That's how they... You know, there's one other factor that Frank has really strong on, and he's saying that overseas as well as here in America, that the Cornish cross genes, the genes from these factory birds, are being crossed over with the heritage breeds. So it's diluting. It's diluting the heritage breeds as well. Sort of I'm not going to say that, but that's something to be aware of. Don't necessarily take your Dominicans and cross it with a Cornish cross and expect to get a dual purpose, more meat bird kind of thing. So,
well, no, certainly not.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to stick with those heritage breeds. Stick with advice from American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. Stick with the breed clubs. They'll give you the best advice. They've tinkered so much with those genes, and they are not genetically modified in the same way that Roundup Ready corn is, but they have just been so highly bred for particular characteristics like fast growth that, as you said, you know, they don't have to be fed hormones because they are naturally overproducing hormones.
Right.
These are birds that if this were occurring naturally, they'd be treated for a disorder.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. they'd be on, God knows what they'd be on. That'd be an interesting case to work up, wouldn't it? To take the profiles of a chicken biochemistry and then see what human drugs they'd be put on to get them to normal.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, as a pharmacist, Pat, you have some of that background. That's an interesting question. Yeah, what if you were presented with this animal or this kind of hormonal profile, what would the diagnosis be?
That's something Mother Earth News might grab a hold of, because Cheryl Long's really interested in that. It's politically pretty touchy. But
It is. All these things are very touchy.
Yeah, like New Dawn saying in the chat room, you know, pink slime.
Right. Remember the pink slime? Yeah. You know, and that put people out of business. We don't want to put people out of jobs, but there are probably other jobs that could be better. You know, that's my feeling is, you know, a lot of the people who are chicken farmers who are, in fact, raising these Cornish rock crosses, they're not making a good living anyway. They're not happy with what they're doing. They're really kind of indentured servants to the company.
Now they're contract growers.
Yeah, they're contract growers, but they are so tightly regulated that it's a convenience for the company to have them on the books that way. But those people, it's very difficult for them to make a reasonable living, and it's not an equitable situation for them either. So I think that there's better ways that can bring us all a better living as well.
Yeah, and more health and the whole thing. Go ahead,
I think it all trickles down. I mean, people want to, you know, you're saying that there's a lot around here too. Tyson is huge down here, and if anybody has any land, they've got, you know, a few chicken houses on the back. Mm-hmm. And you know, Tyson, it's all about the dollar. The person driving down the road with three kids in the back, they want the 99-cent nugget meals. In order to do that, Tyson has to sell their chicken cheap. In order to do that, they've got to, you know, scrimp on. You know, then the people who are raising him don't get any money. Tyson doesn't want to pay them because they don't want to charge much for their chicken because the consumer wants a 99-cent chicken nugget meal. I tell you, you know, like I said, it's all there's so many variables to it wrong there, and I mean, like I said, I think it does come down to a lot to the wallet, because you got the family that wants to spend 99 cents on a meal, and then they got to have whoever needs to get that from somewhere, you know, now Tyson has to make this chicken that's cost effective, so they can't pay this, that, or the other. It's just wrong on a lot of different levels, I think, as well. And I think I think the consumer is partially to blame as well. Not just the Tyson and the Purdue's and the Cargill's and things like that.
Yeah.
I think it all trickles down.
But one of the things that Michael Pollan says so beautifully in his book Omnivore's Dilemma is that these cheap meals, these $1 meals, are not cheap at all. In fact, they're unconscionably expensive because of the health problems that come along later on, of the way that the chickens are grown, environmental problems that stem from the CAFO in a way. It's the concentrated raising animals in the houses. So there are all kinds of hidden costs on there that don't come into that final equation of here's your meal for a dollar.
Well,
and
that's,
I think,
true.
We need to
understand
that.
Yeah, like we've been talking about, Pat, I think that the American consumer, for the most part, really doesn't understand that. And this is a public education issue. And it's also, you know, a lot of people are under a lot of pressure financially and in their lives. And, yeah, they're trying to keep their jobs, and they're trying to somehow take care of their kids, and it's a lot, and they're presented with, you know, picking the kids up from school and taking time off from their jobs and trying to feed everyone. You know, we need to take some steps towards supporting them in being able to cook their own dinner, having the time and the ingredients to do that.
Yeah, and even having an own garden, which takes even more time.
Having a garden, that's right.
Yeah, and that's why that initiative up in Milwaukee and in Chicago of the 20,000 gardens, you know, for to raise nutritional is so inspiring. I think that's the. Hopefully that'll be happening in other cities around the U.S. Go ahead, Whisper.
Yeah, I'll never forget that, when gas was about $4 or $5 a gallon here, I don't know, it was probably about 2 years ago, and I've mentioned this on the radio show before, but you're talking about a lot of the consumers just don't understand. I was in the frozen food section. I was looking at frozen vegetables, and Christine, you may have heard this too. And I'm sitting there, and a lady, and I'm going to stereotype here for a second, but she was in her little tennis outfit in Johns Creek with her probably $500 sunglasses and her $900 pocketbook. And she's, I'm sitting there standing in there next to her, and I look in there, and I do all the grocery shopping, so I saw the price increase, and I told her, I said, well, it looks like the high cost of diesel has finally hit hit our food, or finally hit the green beans. And she looked at me perplexed and was like, what does diesel prices have to do with green beans? And I was just totally, I don't even know what the look on my face was. My jaw probably hit the tile floor, and I was just, or maybe I was just like, oh my gosh, people like this do exist. But I had to explain to her. I was like, well, okay, let's go back. A lot of the fertilizers are petroleum based. Most all the tractors that harvest all of this are diesel. And the ones that a lot of this machinery is run by diesel, and then the trucks to actually deliver it from the farm to the packaging is diesel. And then once it's packed, I had to go down the whole list of why diesel prices would affect the cost of her green beans. I guess she was more concerned about her $500 sunglasses and her $900 Coach purse than she was the cost of her green beans. But she absolutely no clue why high diesel prices would affect the cost of her her green beans. And I'll tell you, this is the biggest garden right now we've ever had. It's probably the whole lot back there is an acre, but of course that's not all garden. So I'm guessing we probably have about a 3/4 acre garden when it comes right down to it. And I'm out there picking, and it's more than we can handle. And I'm trying to there's no reason. Bottom line, folks, grow an acre garden, and you'll come to this. There is no reason why there should be hunger anywhere on this doggone planet. Period. Just no reason for it. And it's absolutely craziness. And plant a garden, folks. It's rewarding. It's fun. Feed your family. I'm hoping that after this spring garden, it's well beyond our expectation. I'm going to say right now, on the 26th of June 2012, I'm guessing that from now until next year, and I probably won't remember. I bet you in a year from now, we're still doing the radio show, I'll be able to say I have not in the last 365 days bought a can of green beans.
I bet you can say that.
Holy cow. or peas or beans or
beans
or anything. It's just amazing. There's after just having this 1 acre garden, I just think what I'm out there picking and the bountiful blessings we're getting, thinking, hey, this is just an acre. There's truly no reason why there should be hunger anywhere on this planet. We're spending all this I want to know how many bushels of corn go into making 10% ethanol for our gasoline, or making all that corn into fuel instead of feeding us or feeding. It's just, I don't know. It's just one of the, I don't know enough about it to really, I guess, make an educated comment on corn for gasoline or ethanol or that type of thing. But there should not be any hunger on this planet. And that's just, I think about that daily when I'm out in the garden picking all this harvest stuff. So, but yeah, the lady had no idea why diesel would affect the price of frozen green beans. Not one iota of a clue.
Well, see, you did a good deed in, telling her for the first time,
yeah.
And she may not have absorbed it all that time, but she's heard
right.
it once now, and that plants that seed, and that's what we need to be doing, is to keep spreading the word. And you raise a good point about, what are we really growing here? And, of course, the corn that they turn into ethanol, that's not corn that could be eaten anyway. That's that industrial corn.
Okay, gotcha. Completely different. Trish in the
chat
room.
But they're using that land to grow something that it could be used to grow actual food. And that's part of the problem of farm subsidies and this farm bill that just got passed. I think that clearly the pressure is on. There are competing interests that are pushing back against those agribusiness corporations, but they have a lot of money and they lobby very hard. So it's very slow change.
Mm-hmm. Trish in the chat room, somebody was talking about, tilling up the sod, things like that. But let me tell you what, I'll share this with you. When we lived up on our small lot in the Atlanta area in a subdivision, I would take it upon myself, because I did not own one. Tillers can be expensive. You should go to Craigslist, and a good one can be very expensive. But, pardon me, I had one of those sneak attack yawns just hit me. And,
that really got you, didn't it?
Sneak attack yawn, yeah, just come out of nowhere. And so I didn't have one then. So I would take it. I wanted one. I had a garden. And so I went and I would rent one. And I found that a lot of these rental places, if you rent it on Saturday, they're closed on Sunday, and you only have to pay for one day rental, but you get it till Monday. So if I rented it Saturday morning, I had it all day Saturday and all day Sunday, and I had to return it Monday, which gave me an extra time for the rental fee for $69, $79, $89 for the day, and I'd have it all weekend. And I would till my garden, say Saturday morning, and then I would literally go door to door in the neighborhood to the friends that I knew and said, "Hey, I've got this tiller. It's paid up until Monday morning." And I volunteered. I said, I will till your garden for you. And I did about 1, 2, 3, 4, at least 4 right off the top of my head that I could think. And I did 4 gardens in our neighborhood from that one tiller. And I did that year after year while we were living up there. And then, of course, a lot of times we would share. We do that now. I got our cucumbers, or got them in late, but our neighbors got theirs in early. I traded them a bucket of squash for a bucket of cucumbers. So, you know, we kind of did the same thing up there in Alpharetta on our small lots. We can't plant a lot of different stuff, but I may have more tomatoes. They may have more, cucumbers than we can trade. But that's what I did. I'd rent a tiller for on a Saturday. It wouldn't have to be back till Monday because they're closed Sunday. And then I would till others. Yeah, Trish said they got a $1,000 tiller for $300 on Craigslist. Someone just, it wasn't for them, or they're moving, or they don't need it anymore. So, we've been talking about the deals you can find on Craigslist. Again, $300 is a big chunk of change, but it's something that if you take care of will last years and years and years, and definitely get your definitely money's worth. I came across a deal. My next-door neighbor had a $700 tiller, his back has pretty much given out. He just can't utilize it much. He bought it brand new for $700. He literally used it. This is no exaggeration. You hear these stories a lot of times, but he's my next-door neighbor, so I know. Probably used it maybe a half a dozen times, 6 to 12 times he used it, and that was it on his little lot doing flower beds. And he came over and said, "Hey, if you want to buy it, I know you have the big garden. You use it a lot more than I. In fact, you know, I borrowed it from him a couple of times." He said, "I'll sell it to you for $300. So, I mean, you come across those deals sometimes, and it'll be a nice multi-year tool to use here at the homestead for look for some of that kind of stuff. But yeah, it was I tried to get as many people into gardening as I possibly could, running that tiller. If you go through your neighborhood with the tiller one on Saturday and say, "Hey, would you like to plant a garden?" Because, you know, when you think about it, I've got to go out there. I've got the sod. I've got to turn it over. I've got to dig it up by hand. It's a chore. You got a nice rear tine tiller and get it done in a quarter of the time, and it's a beautiful garden, and then they'll be more apt to continue with gardening throughout the years. And I think that's a plus. Ladies, it's about 8 after. I need to go to commercial break. When we come back, we can talk a little bit, if you got some time, till about 1:30. We can talk about some American breeds, things like that, and a little bit more about this. It's a great topic, and we're learning a lot. Today we're talking with Christine Heinrich, author of How to Raise Poultry and author of How to Raise Chickens, and she's also a historian with the Society for Preservation of Poultry Antiquities. Also, Pat Foreman is joining us, my co-host, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, Backyard Market Gardening, and several others, and we'll be back right after this short break. Stay with us, folks.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brinsea.com. Brinsea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brinsea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brinsea, technology you can trust.
You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce, I'll don my super suit. Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, the nation's only radio show about backyard poultry, heritage poultry, and of course living a self-sustaining lifestyle, and having a lot of fun in the chat room so far today. Our guest today, of course, is Christine Heinrich, author of a couple of great books, How to Raise Poultry, How to Raise chickens, and they're both kind of endorsed by the FFA. They got their logo right there on her book, and on her books rather. And she's a historian with the Society for Preservation of Poultry Antiquities. And Pat Foreman, my co-host. In fact, Pat actually got disconnected, but she is back now. And again, the reason why I know Pat is back with us is because you can always hear when she arrives or walks through a door. All righty, Pat, you're back with us.
Okay. I still love that song. I'm going to play it at my funeral.
Gotta love it. Alrighty. Yeah. Alright, we got about 15 minutes left, and so we can kind of just kind of wrap it up over the next 15 minutes and talk about anything that was on the list that we didn't get to. Hello?
I think they're about.
Yep, I'm here.
It's a great way to get to know your neighbors. We were at a community garden, their annual summer barbecue on Sunday. Over in Morro Bay, they've got a quite large community garden that's really developed over the years. And one of the moving forces behind that was...
Pat, is Christina breaking up to you?
Yes, it is breaking up a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm on a landline here.
Yeah, you were fine until... Hang on just a second. Let me go put you on hold, and then I'll bring you back... Give me just a second. It may be something on our end, so give me just a second. Let me update the switchboard, and then I'll bring you back on, Christine. Give me just a second. It may just be when I brought you back live here. Let's try this again. Okay, go ahead. We'll try that.
Okay, how's that? Yeah, we were at our local community garden here in Morro.
Nope.
Uh-oh.
Yep. Okay. Christine, I'm going to have you call back because you'll talk for a few seconds and disappear, and then you'll come back in. We'll hear about three words, and then you disappear again. So call us right back if you would. That would be fabulous.
I shall do that. Hold on.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
Now, meanwhile, chickens in community gardens, I think, are the next wave of chickenhood in the U.S. Now that people are getting them more in their homes, they'll want them in their gardens. And the familiarity and chickens' husbandry skills are getting better. So I predict we're going to be seeing a lot of community gardens that have livestock like chickens as well. What do you think of that, Whisper?
I think so, yeah. It's a lot of community gardens are popping up all over the country, and they, like you know, and you preach and have preached for many years, Pat, they go together. I mean, you know, chickens and community gardens.
No-brainer. It's a total no-brainer to me. Yeah.
An absolutely no-brainer. Let me get back over here to the switchboard. Here we go. Let's try this and see what happens. Okay, let's try this, Christine. Maybe we'll have some luck here.
Okay, how's that? Is that any clearer?
Well, so far so good. You haven't broken up.
All right.
Here we go.
Okay, yeah. I was saying that we were over at our Estero Community Garden in Morro Bay on Sunday for their annual garden barbecue. And you do that to welcome the community in and to encourage people to see what they're doing and to enjoy the nice meal with them. And they charge a certain amount for lunch, and they use that money then to build things that will help the whole, all the gardeners there. They purchase tools. They built a tool shed and a nice sink this past year. They have some plans for the coming year. So, you know, certainly those kinds of community efforts, you know, they're very helpful, and you get to know your neighbors, and that's an important way to spread those heavy costs, you know, and to get started. You know, people aren't always sure that they're going to like get sick,
oh, no.
They're not able to do it. You know, then they don't have all those tools just sitting idle. People can use them. So, you know, I think that doing things in a communal way can certainly work out for people, can
absolutely
make all these things more available.
And those tools can include things like, you know, rototillers or
exactly.
A tractor. Or wheelbarrows, hoes. I mean, it's all the garden stuff, and it's that's a trend that's going on too. Is having the community tour.
Yeah. I've got a few dirty hoes in my barn I could lend out.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, it's an oldie but a goodie. So, yeah, absolutely. Always. I know last year with our fall garden, well, we donated a couple of truckloads full of produce to the community, and we processed it a bunch of chickens and donated those. So we're as we always do, we can as much as we can for us, and then we'll sell a little bit, and then of course we'll give away the remainder. It's I think it's just one of the things that we all should do. Kind of to wrap it up, Christine, tell us a little bit about any travels or any events that you're going to be going to here over the next over the summer that maybe some of your fans and our fans could come and meet you if you've got anything lined up, and then we'll do the same with Pat, and then I'll wrap it up.
Okay, well, I'm going to be going off to Dallas, Texas the week of July 18th through the 25th. Not the best time of year to go to Texas in the heat, but it's for a conference that will be held inside a hotel, so I guess we'll be able to manage it. And this year, last year, I had a story that did win a prize about elephant seals. This year, I've submitted a story about otters. The conference would actually love to have an upbeat. Well, the otter story is pretty upbeat, but they'd love to have an upbeat story about poultry. The first year I went, several years ago, one of the organizers said, "You know, oh, please help us." Literary nonfiction covers a very wide range of all kinds of biography, and any kind of anything you might read in a newspaper could be developed this way. They had a lot of war stories and a lot of kind of memoirs about difficult family life. And she said, "Gee, you know, it's kind of depressing to read it. Why don't you write us some fun chicken story?" So, you know, if anyone's got a story of a personal get in touch with me and we'll see if we can put it together as a story for this. As I say, I've got an otter story I've submitted, which is really interesting. It's about how Monterey Bay Aquarium, they discovered when they tried to rescue otter pups and raise them themselves with humans, they got too accustomed to people and they weren't safe to be released to the wild. So they have some resident otters that live at the aquarium in their exhibit, and they are females who are willing to raise otter pups that are not their own. So they use those surrogate otter mothers to rehabilitate abandoned orphan otter pups. So really, it's a very fun story.
Nice.
And yeah, so that's where I'll be in July. There'll be a short version of it that will be posted for Audubon probably within the next couple of weeks, and then we'll see what happens in the competition and see if it wins a prize.
Excellent. Well, wish you all the best.
Okay, thanks a lot, Pat. How about you?
How about me? It's a busy summer coming up. Andy, thanks to you, I'll be talking at the City Planners meeting at Wintergreen, Virginia on the 7th and the 8th of July coming up. And then the weekend of the 21st and 22nd, I'll be at the Viet Day Lily and Wine and Food Festival. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Too bad Arlena Schott can't be there because it's a wine and food festival as well.
Oh, yeah.
And then we get on into September's my really busy month, and that seems like a really long, long time away right now, but I know it's coming up fast. I'll be at the Mother Earth Fair up in Seven Springs, Virginia on the 21st and 22nd of September on that Saturday, and then Sunday I'll be at the Pennsylvania Renewable Energy and Sustainable Lifestyles Fair. And I'm going to drive from one to the other that weekend. Monticello has their Heritage Days coming up, and that's the 14th and 15th of September. I'll be doing workshops and some book signings at all those. So that's sort of what's on my radar that's significant at this point. So, Whisper, how about you?
Where the Mother Earth News Fair this fall is in Virginia?
No, it's at Seven Springs, Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. Okay, I was going to say that's where it was,
I think last year.
Okay, gotcha. Yep. Okay, gotcha. Okay, very good.
Yeah, and then unfortunately, the two festivals are the same weekend. This is the first time that has happened. But the Pennsylvania Renewable Energy and Sustainable Lifestyles Festival, it's a wonderful gathering up there in Pennsylvania as well, in Cuts, Pennsylvania, something like that. It's worth going to both of them. They're about 3 hours apart, so I'm going to be Sunday morning getting up really early and driving over to the other one. So there's all kinds of things happening there in Pennsylvania. Wonderful fairs. I love them.
Awesome. Very good. Now, we'll be hitting the road. I've had to change a few things around for July, but I think we're still planning on getting out of here. Where my calendar go here? July. Here we go. Looking out, probably heading out on Sunday the 8th, possibly doing an event in Raleigh, North Carolina on Monday the 9th. On Tuesday the 10th, I'll be speaking at the Virginia Beach City Council meeting, promoting backyard poultry there. There's a big battle going on there. I'm hoping Thursday we'll be back down to Savannah to do maybe an event in Savannah, Georgia, and then Friday, Titusville, Florida. Two sponsors that kind of promote the same thing. Thursday we'll be at GQF Manufacturing, home of the great Hova Bader and Genesis Incubators and the Sportsman's Incubators. And then, of course, we'll be on Friday. We hope we'll be broadcasting live in Titusville at Brency Products, another great company that makes some great incubators as well. And they've got a couple of new coops out as well. So that'll be a busy week. I'll be posting all of that and where we'll actually be so people can come out and say hello on that week. And then the week after that, of course, there'll be no radio shows the week of the 16th, because that will be our week vacation. We always take the week before Jen has to go back to school for the fall. And so it's really kind of our last vacation until Christmas, Thanksgiving, Christmas. So there'll be no shows that week of the 16th of July. So I'll be posting all that on our Facebook page. We hope that you can all join us on Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/ The Chicken Whisperer. So that's going to wrap up another great show. Christine, thank you very much for joining us from out there in California. Great information as always. And again, maybe some of our folks will come and see you in Dallas. And Pat, same with you. And let's see, Christine, you'll be back on. Let me look at the calendar here for July. And the last 1, 2, 3. There's actually 5 Tuesdays, but I think July 24th is the Tuesday. I think your next scheduled, the fourth Tuesday of the month, and right now I think we'll be back in town for that Tuesday, so you can keep me informed for that day. Actually, the fourth Tuesday is the 24th.
Right, but I'm going to be out of town. I'll still be in Dallas then.
Okay,
so we'll arrange.
The 31st, you said, possibly?
Yeah.
Okay, we can shoot for that. Then we'll just tentatively have it on the 31st, and we'll contact each other a few days before the show.
Okay, sounds good. I'll have a report from Dallas.
Super great. Thank you. Thank you very much, and have a safe trip.
Okay, thanks, and same to you guys. Talk to you next month.
All right.
Thanks, Christine.
All righty, Pat. Well, that's going to wrap it up. I'll just turn it over to you, because we miss your wrap ups when you're not here. So
aww.
I'll just turn it over to you, and we'll be back tomorrow, folks. Let's see, tomorrow's Wednesday. Andrew Odom, tinyrevolution.us. His tiny house is really taking shape, no pun intended. I think the outside is complete now. They're working on finishing the inside and the rooms inside, and it's it's very exciting time for him and his family, and for us two to have him on. Thursday, Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. Give me just a second. Let me see if I can find what our topic will be Thursday. It's ended up being one of my favorite shows here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer when Richard is on. And I know he sent me the next 3 or 4 subjects that he's going to be on. So here we go, show topics, Richard Frudenberger. And it looks like this Thursday, the 28th, Gardening for Seasoned Citizens, over 50 techniques and setups that are body friendly But age is just a number, right? So, again, if you're over 50, gardening for seasoned citizens, and that'll be interesting. I'm anxious to hear all about that. And then July 12th, Dutch oven cooking. Oh, yeah. And then July 26th, quick and easy compost. So how to speed up that process and still get good organic matter. So that's we got some great topics coming up with Richard Fruberger. Got to love it, and I got to love his magazine, too. So, Pat, take it away.
Okay, well, thanks, Whisper. Our special guest today was Christine Heinrich. She's the historian for the Society for the Preservation of Poultry Antiquities, also known as SPPA. She's also the author of How to Raise Poultry, and her website is poultrybookstore.com. PoultryBookstore.com. Thanks to all the chat room chickeneers and all our listeners for tuning in. And, of course, blogtalkradio.com provides our radio, chat, and the video services. Andy Schneider is the Chicken Whisperer, the creator of the show, and, of course, the wind beneath our wings that allows us to fly so far and so high. I'm Pat Forman, and from all of us, may the flock be with you, quoth the chicken, evermore. God bless everybody.